Welcome back to Project Socrates. Once again, I'm your host, Colleen Harding, and I have a special treat for you. My friend, Ryan Dawson from AnchReport.com, also the filmmaker behind such wonderful films as War by Deception, Decades of Deception, also author of some incredible books like Separation of Business and State, Welcome to the USSA, to name a few. He has some really cool t-shirts that he's going to tell you about at some point that you need to pick up. So you guys are probably already familiar with Ryan Dawson, and if you aren't, then crawl out from underneath the InfoWars rock that you've been living under. And speaking of InfoWars, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and dig in because apparently what we've been covering for the past few months as it relates to Ebola and most recently measles has gotten in the craw of the InfoWars team. Again, let's reiterate for the record, Rye, that you and I were right about Ebola. We were right about measles.
It's very interesting. Everybody knows I'm a superhero geek. There's an episode of The Flash and one of the lines where we've had to deal with communism, terrorism, Ebola, metahumans. They threw Ebola in there as if it was going to be a lasting phase like the war on terror or the war on communism.
That is incredible. You know, I think that Ebola is going to make a comeback right now. Things are kind of quiet. We haven't had any new cases of it. But interestingly enough, our government is very heavily invested in the production of the new Ebola vaccines. So I postulate that that's going to make a comeback at some point.
It went away right after the Senate election was over. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And speaking of InfoWars, Jonestown, whatever. Do you remember when Captain Crazy was telling everybody that the elites of Hollywood were all fleeing to go live in bunkers in New Zealand because there was going to be a giant virus?
Yes.
And that was based on James Cameron moving to New Zealand, not to live in a bunker, just to live in New Zealand. And that was it. So he took a story, a real story of James Cameron moving to New Zealand, big deal. He's going there to live in a bunker, as are all the other Hollywood elite insiders, because they're about to wipe us all out with a big super virus.
That's the perfect microcosm of what the reporting approach over at InfoWars.com is. They'll take something that happened and then just blow it out of the water, just completely blow it out of proportion to the degree that frightens everyone, and it's based on just the tiniest grain of truth.
But see, there was no consequence for it. He told everybody they're going to live in bunkers in New Zealand. And he was swearing and stuff because he was so serious on that particular video. He started cussing. I don't think cuss words are a big deal one way or the other, but he had a curtain around him. He's like this rush thing. And of course, it was ridiculous.
They went on
to peddle Ebola and everything else. But if you notice, when he was talking about Ebola nonstop was when Israel was slaughtering Palestinians the last time they had their Operation Pillar of God and murdered thousands of people. He didn't want to cover that, so he talked about Ebola forever.
Yep, and that is a very interesting, that's a great segue. Let's go ahead and, for the listeners who may be new to questioning Israel or wonder why, as a political scientist, I have questions about Israel, can we do like Israel 101 for the person who may be new to this? Maybe, you know, we have a lot of Christian listeners who, you know, may be uncomfortable with questioning Israel because Israel's, you know, heavily featured in the Bible, but we're not necessarily talking about the Jewish people. We're talking about a state and their policies. So can we do like an Israel 101? Would that be okay, Ray?
Yeah. Really has nothing to do with religion. It's a country that was created in the 40s after World War II. And as a nation, and nations are not ethnicities, I always give the example, if I criticize North Korea, it doesn't mean I hate Asians or Koreans or what, it's a government. And South Korea has the same language, the same ethnic makeup, as close as you can get in geography, and yet they're day and night based on the one glaring difference, government. One's communist, one isn't. And Israel is an apartheid state, like South Africa used to be. It is a state that has policies where they permit the government to build racial colonies. That is, they build cities and homes for one specific race, usually at the expense of others, where they bulldoze down homes of Palestinians. and they build settlements for Jews. It wouldn't be very confusing if it was anything else, if it was removed from religion. That's what seems to cloud people's judgment. If whites were demolishing houses of blacks, or blacks were demolishing houses of whites, it would be pretty clear. But they seem to think that they inherited the land because their perversion of Judaism under the Zionist ideology, political ideology, is one in which they think that they racially inherit land exclusively and they can't live with their neighbors.
Right.
That's the military occupation. That's been going on for 40 years, and that's why there's a conflict there. Of course, they shoot each other, and there's cycles of revenge, but it's the base of the issue is the military occupation, confiscation of land, and the building of racial settlements. That's in the West Bank. The other side of Palestine is called Gaza, or the Gaza Strip, and they have a blockade placed on them by the Israeli state, which limits the number of calories and food that can come into the area. And they've also built a giant wall around basically all the water and any resource of value to annex territory for the Israeli state.
What would you say to the frequently asked question of, well, isn't this just an age-old, you know, sectarian conflict? They're equally matched, you know. And when people say this, this inspires an attitude of indifference because they figure, yeah, this has been going on forever. They're equally matched. You know, this is just a religious war between Judaism and Islam. And people.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear what you're saying. People do say that. But one, it's not evenly matched whatsoever. And two, It's not an age-old issue. If you want to base the land on religion, it was under Islam for 1,184 years uncontested. It became Jewish in 1948. That's all. And Jews had always lived as a minority around that area and every other area in the Middle East. If you want to go all the way back to biblical times, probably never more than 3%, which to me is irrelevant because you don't racially inherit land anyway. And if you want to start drawing maps based on, I don't know, picking a date in history and saying who was there then, that's who belongs there now, then you really have to redraw the entire world, right, including emptying the entire United States and Canada, etc. None of the borders are the same in any of the states.
Right.
People aren't stagnant. Jewish were nomadic people, so they were in Sinai. They were in Palestine, they were in Iraq, Jordan, Iran, etc. They made a Jewish homeland because of what happened in World War II to preserve Jewish culture and identity. And they unfortunately squatted on land that was already occupied and exclusively took this land in the settlement areas. And Palestinians are treated as second-rate citizens. There are Arabs and Palestinians who live in Israel, but they don't have autonomy. And Israel has a culture which permits ardent racism, where most of the world, it's a huge social taboo to be a racial supremacist. In Israel, it's the norm.
And that is the complete irony of the situation, because the genesis of Israel was after post-World War II to create a homeland for them as they were fleeing, you know, all that conflict and genocide. And then, you know, for it to transform into a situation where presently, you know, it's just steeped in this incredible racism. I mean, if that...
Well, I want to say that's the said reason. All the other people who also were murdered in mass, people in Ukraine, died by the tens of millions. And there were a lot of victims in World War II. The Allies did win the war, though, so there really was no reason to go anywhere. They could have just stayed in Europe, which a lot of people did. I mean, Israel had been pining, the Zionists had been wanting their own state before the First World War. So they can say it's because of World War II. And I said that as in like the official narrative. But these men and these groups had been trying to take that land for many, many decades, long before Hitler or any of that.
Right. Now, the listener may be wondering, okay, well, this is all interesting, but what does this have to do with me as an American? Why should I care about Israel? Well, I would say one of the reasons maybe why you should care about Israel is because of how influential they are on our foreign policy and just how much of our tax dollars we invest in Israel annually. Can you talk about why we should care about Israel and what they're doing?
Well, we ought to care about justice no matter where it is, but if you want to get into a monetary reason, the United States sends Israel $3 billion annually. That's more foreign aid than to any other nation. And this isn't a loan that's repaid. This is a forgiven loan. So they're just giving away billions of dollars, with a B, billions. Some of America's own cities are in desperate need of help, like Detroit, for example. And I'm not saying the solution to such problems is to throw money at it, but this certainly a solution is not to take money, more money out of the system and give it to a foreign state that doesn't really need it. 75% of this cash flow is earmarked to be recycled on military gear, which means they're just laundering money through foreign aid to purchase toys from Lockheed Martin. Some of those aircraft cost $500 million a piece, and so on. And if it were not for Israel, we wouldn't have gone to war in Iraq. There wouldn't be a conflict in Syria. We would not have sanctions on Iran, which means the Europeans and the Americans have more access to gas and oil. And also the standard of living in Iran would improve as well. You should care about those people too. There probably wouldn't have been a revolution in Egypt because Mubarak would never have been in charge, so Sisi never would have come to fruition either. And all that policy changed back in the 60s after Kennedy was killed. Johnson pulled a complete reversal. The Israelis actually attacked an American ship, the USS Liberty, and tried to blame it on the Egyptians. However, some of the sailors survived and correctly reported what really happened, so they had to backpedal and say, all right, we attacked the ship, but we thought it was an Egyptian boat, when it was clearly marked as an American boat. Mm-hmm. But instead of trading with all these states who are sitting on oil and resources that would benefit the U.S. far more than Israel gives us nothing but demands, we have sided with a racially apartheid state, a bunch of religious fanatics in Israel, a bunch of religious fanatics of Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia, which hasn't done us any good at all. And we've wasted a lot of money and killed a lot of people and it started a lot of conflict. But that seems to be the goal from the beginning. Post-World War II, these giant military industries wanted to have more conflicts and wanted to perpetuate war because that's how they profit.
Right, that feeds the military-industrial complex war machine. Now, question. So what would you say?
I want to say Israel never had a chance. When you have a brand new country that is getting the bulk of its money and influence from these giant weapons industries who are trying to cause another conflict with Muslims and Jews, religious wars are always profitable. And they're financing and giving the money to the most militant, most racist, those who you can foresee will cause the most conflict are being supported by the outside. Guess who comes to power in Israel? All the fanatics. And so that state never had a chance to really be about Jewish culture or anything like that. It just became a honeypot for military industries.
Wow, that's a good point. I never really thought of that specifically. So what would you say to the frequently asked question that, you know, our relationship with Israel is, you know, how do you always say this? The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So if we're against radical Islam, and we're trying to deal with that situation in the Middle East, is the consequence for us to be close to Israel because they are juxtaposed to the agenda of radical Islam?
Well, we didn't have radical Islam until the creation of Israel. We didn't have conflicts. I mean, I guess if you went all the way back to the conflict in Tripoli with Thomas Jefferson, but I mean, we have not had conflicts with the Middle East for over 100 years, and we created a conflict by putting a bunch of religious fanatics in power in a state that is racially exclusive, that had a very predictable outcome.
Right.
And that's who the U.S. always supports. We say we're against radical Islam, yet who funded the Mujahideen, who funded Al-Qaeda, who backed the FSA, who supported Jandallah, M.E.K., and of course these Wahhabis from Saudi Arabia and the Zionists in Israel. All the religious fanatics, Jewish or Muslim, get support from the United States and the U.S. allies. It's the secular states and the moderates who are getting attacked. And so I don't really think they're being genuine when they say we're out to fight radical Islam. They're out to foster radical Islam, because radical Islam is the gift that keeps on giving. They don't have an Air Force. They don't have a Navy. They're not really a threat to the continental United States. But they sure have killed a lot of Syrians and Iraqis and given us a theater of war for the F-35 and other projects. It's about money. I mean, why did they bomb Laos and Cambodia during the Vietnam War? It wasn't even out of hatred. It wasn't out of fear. It was purely for profit, completely indifferent. They dropped more munitions on those countries than were dropped on Germany in World War II. They're just blowing up rice farmers, whatever. There's still cluster bombs there. I mean, and it wasn't a threat to the U.S. It really wasn't in U.S. interests, other than helicopters and heroin. This is the problem. We have an addiction to war, and we are fostering fanatics of all forms across the globe.
Can you bring it back to a point you mentioned just briefly a moment ago, what the drug war has to do with this entire war complex?
Well, I mean, I recommend people listen to a podcast with Doug Valentine and myself about drugs, the mafia, and the police, which gets into it in depth. But essentially, if we look at Afghanistan, for example, we've been there 13, almost 14 years, longest war the U.S. has ever engaged in. They're pulling in $64 billion a year in the heroin trade. And by they, I'm talking about the Central Intelligence Agency. $64 billion. That's a lot of money, and it's off the books. It's not like selling a commodity on the open market. This is a black market. Drugs are illegal, which also is why they're so expensive and why they make so much money. They're also addictive and so on. This money can then be used to pay for terrorists and rental groups like the FSA, who ships its guns to ISIS, or whoever we want to arm. We do this in Africa too, if we want to get into those groups. And the CIA doesn't have to go to Congress and get money appropriated and approved. Our Congress is dumb, but I wouldn't say they're all evil. Some of them are, surely, but most of them would say, no, you can't have money to give Al-Qaeda. But if you're using drug money, then you don't have to go and ask for it. You already have your own black budget. And the CIA has relied on heavily on underworld activities like narcotics, prostitution, gambling, and so on.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's talk about ISIS then. That's what's on everyone's mind. So can you tie these concepts to what we are currently experiencing with ISIS?
Yes, I mean, ISIS actually was originally Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and Al-Qaeda was not in Iraq until the U.S. invaded Iraq for the second time. And what the U.S. did to Iraq is similar to what the British did to India, Pakistan, which used to all be India, is they orientalized the entire region. They used to all live together. When we hear Kurd, Sunni, Shiite, etc., they intermarried. It wasn't like now. But when they helped foster a bunch of hardline Shiites who used the government as a form of tribal nepotism, you know, they have the jobs, they have the money, they can control, and they divvy it out only to their own kind, that, of course, ostracized the Sunnis. So they were rightly angry and fighting with the Shiites. And then it becomes sort of a cycle of revenge killing. So this happened in Ireland too. once, maybe you didn't buy into it, but once a Sunni kills a Shiite, then the Shiites kill a Sunni, it's just like gang warfare back and forth. And they're fighting over control of government, because government has the power, so much power in the economy, that they can use that power to only help their own at the exclusion of the others. Now, of course, the solution would be to have a secular government, or to get government out of the economy, but then there'd be no reason to fight for it. There's no reason to bribe or lobby or fight to monopolize the government for your religious sect if the government doesn't have control over all of the economics. And what the U.S. did was they followed an Israeli plan from this man named Oded Yanan, which actually proposed that the West should foster sectarian violence on purpose, because every Arab-on-Arab conflict, or Persian-on-Persian, benefits Israel. Doesn't benefit the United States, but that's not who is in charge of foreign policy. Israel has been stealing nuclear technology from the United States for over 60 years, and they have been directing U.S. policy in the Middle East since 1963.
So actually, there's not a lot of benefit. I don't see the benefit being translated to, you know, the average American taxpayer for our relationship with Israel whatsoever. I see nothing but risk to us in terms of our finances, in terms of our reputation in the world, and all these reasons. I don't see any benefit whatsoever, and they've been spying on us. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and I think also just the American reputation. America used to be looked upon as a bastion of freedom and was had a lot of high esteem, especially after the Second World War. But now, collectively, the world, especially after the second invasion of Iraq, which was clearly based on lies and deception, and they're still unapologetic about it, the entire world looks at Americans now like these, you know, fanboys of Chris Kyle types, like, we all have a mental disorder or something, that we're just violent and steal what we want and to hell with the rest of you. And so they just think we're dumb and violent and easily tricked. And I guess a large portion of the public is easily fooled by government.
Unfortunately. So now, you know what? You mentioned the American sniper situation. Let's spend a little bit of time there. Then I really want to dig in pretty hard to 28 pages. You have interesting things to say about Chris Kyle, so go ahead.
Yeah, the guy's a sniper. He claimed he killed 160 people or something, as if that's a wonderful thing. I have trouble believing those statistics. I wonder how they got confirmed, considering this man lied about shooting people in New Orleans. During the hurricane or after the hurricane. Said he shot 30 people, looters. Where are the bodies? Where's the evidence? There wasn't any. He was lying. He also said he shot a couple guys who were armed and trying to steal his truck, which was a lie. And then he said he got in a bar fight and knocked someone out, which was a lie. And then later he said, and it was Jesse Ventura. And he got sued for that, and Jesse Ventura won the lawsuit. I mean, Chris Kyle made a lot more money off his book than what he lost by lying about Jesse Ventura, but I don't know why someone would want to say they got in a fight with a 63-year-old man and knocked him out. That's not the most courageous thing, but it's Chris Kyle. He just wanted a story. And basically, I think what happened is Chris Kyle is the Jessica Lynch 2.0.
Yes.
Jessica Lynch was this female soldier who got captured in Iraq. And they had this huge rescue story narrative going on, and it all got blown apart because she wasn't rescued. The Iraqis took her to the hospital and then released her, which she admitted. And this is spooky because some people involved in that case died. I was very close with her roommate in West Virginia, where she went to school. Vacationed where I used to live in Hatteras Island. I know a lot about Jessica Lynch, but she was an honest girl, and she said, look, nobody held me hostage, and there was no raid or anything like that. I went to the hospital, they took care of me and let me go. And so but you could see how the mass media was just pining for this story. woman in the military and the Great Rescue and everything. They needed a face for the war.
Right.
And they didn't get it. A woman who was with her, by the way, Native American woman, is first casualty of the war. Nobody remembers her name or sacrifice, but, you know, Jessica Lynch. Well, when they found Chris Kyle, they found someone who was willing to lie about anything. The problem is, he lied about everything. He didn't know when to stop. And it, like Alex, his exaggerations just got bigger and bigger.
Right.
With the, you know, fighting Jesse Ventura in a bar, which is ridiculous, and shooting people in Louisiana, and other things. There were other things he lied about, like giving proceeds from his book to charity, which didn't happen. They kept it. So I guess the whole family lied.
I just want to interrupt 1 second. I just had a flash in my mind of South Park, the Russell Crowe fighting around the world. That's what this guy reminds me of. He just wants everybody to think he's, you know, this incredible patriot. He's incredibly macho, and, you know, it reminds
yeah,
me of Skit.
This is the thing, too.
Alex Jones.
Being macho has nothing to do with war.
No.
Anybody can pull a trigger. It takes bravery, I guess, if, you know, if we're fighting somebody with the equivalent technology, we're just blowing the piss out of the third world. But,
that's not no.
Veterans
that's
of World War II are a little bit different than veterans of the Iraq War. They are so outgunned in Iraq, and people have to remember, we invaded them. They didn't attack America. They had nothing to do with 9/11. They weren't terrorists. They're not savages. It's one of the oldest civilizations on Earth, actually. And they're defending themselves from invaders,
right,
as we would if somebody came to the United States and bombed our cities looking for weapons, assuming we didn't have any. Everybody knows we do, but if someone just started blowing up Chicago, people in Chicago, including the kids and the women, would fight them.
They would resist, precisely.
Of course, with grenades or whatever they had.
Right.
And Chris Kyle is sniping these people. Fine. He already crossed that line. He already went over there, and that was his job, and whatever. It's your job to murder people. Like, that excuses it. You put on a fancy hat, and now you can murder. But anyway, he's a soldier, and that's what soldiers do. They kill whoever they're told is the enemy without thinking about it. Or they wouldn't be there in the first place. And they try to say, like, well, he saved Marines' lives. And that's like, you know, I gave the example of a rapist. When he's raping a woman, and the woman starts punching him, trying to fight him off, so he knocks her out. He says, well, I'm defending myself because she punched me. Forgetting
right.
the part that she punched you because you're raping her.
Right.
He's defending his Marines from people attacking them, forgetting that the whole reason they're getting attacked is because the Marines are over there blowing up their city and killing them first.
Oh, you'd think this would be logic 101, but, you know, you have to remind people sometimes.
Well, we're Americans, so we're good, and they're not, so they're bad. It's that simple G.I. Joe mentality, and there's a lot of ignoramuses who think we were fighting terrorists, that Iraq had something to do with 9/11, and they think that because their television told them that.
Right.
Their television told them that Saddam Hussein and Iraqi officials gave anthrax to one of the 9/11 hijackers, Mohammed Atta, in this meeting in the Czech Republic. Of course, they didn't even say that. They said Czechoslovakia, which didn't even exist anymore. But when the name of the country's wrong, you ought to question the whole story, right? But anyway.
Hold that thought, because we're going to go to commercial in just a second, and then we'll be back, and you can dig into those topics and transition into a longer discussion about the 28 pages right after this commercial break. But just something crossed my mind that I want to mention before we go to commercial is, at the top of the show, you said, you know, Islam is the gift that keeps giving. And then radical Islam is the gift that keeps giving. And then just something that crossed my mind is, you know, that is especially true due to the fact that, unlike previous generations and wars that we fought, you know, the enemy wore a uniform. This time, just about anyone could be a target, man, woman, child. It doesn't matter. So what was the death toll in the Iraq war of civilians, of Iraqis that were lost? What was it, 5 million, 3 million The number escapes me right now.
Well, the number of civilians has gone up in every war. It was really bad in Vietnam. About 80% of that 2 million were civilians. In Iraq, it was more like 90%. But it's hard. It depends on how you want to count it, because there's a lot of it from Iraqi on Iraqi violence, which would not have happened had they not been invaded. And that's where a lot of the deaths come from as well. And really, I see no reason to draw any lines. I would include all the good million that starved to death from the sanctions between the two wars, and another 100,000 in the first war. So you're looking at another very considerably 2 million people who are now dead because of the war, both wars and the sanctions.
Haunting. Well, let's go to commercial break, and we'll dig more into this right after this commercial break here on Project Socrates. My guest today is Ryan Dawson from ancreport.com. Go ahead and hit that up during the commercial break. We'll be right back on the Freedomizer Radio Network. Welcome back to Project Socrates. I'm your host, Colleen Harding, and I am here with Ryan Dawson from ancreport.com. Now, before the break, we were talking a little bit about Iraq and the sanctions. Can you complete your thought about the sanctions and the death toll?
Well, yeah, I want to say there's a pretty famous quote, a little video out there with Madeleine Albright saying, when she's asked, do you think the price is worth it? She says, we think the price is worth it, after she was told 500,000 children had died. Now, she was asked that in 1997. But the sanctions went from the first Gulf War all the way to 2003. And so there was another 6 years of sanctions after that 500,000 mark. And that was 500,000 kids. It didn't even include others. That was a Harvard study, by the way. Very judicious and strenuous study. 500,000 children starving to death. But they had a long way to go. 6 more years. They were on the oil for food program. So all these people who say, well, we went to get the oil. No, they already had the oil. Iraq was forced to sell their oil in order to eat at the lowest price possible. The Iraq war is for Israeli interest, because all of the pretext to invade Iraq came from the same goofballs who were involved in Iran-Contra, either involved in it directly or involved in covering it up, like Dick Cheney. He was on the panel to cover it up. Or Paul Wolfowitz, who was the core person for Iran-Contra in the State Department. He and McFarlane are the one. He was the go-between liaison with Kimchi and Israel. And again, that was an operation where the United States and Israel worked together to covertly sell arms and third-party arms, U.S. and third-party arms, to other countries involved in a war, which prolonged the war in Iran and Iraq, again, slaughtering Iraqis. As well as the offshoot profits for narcotics and weapons going to the Contras to fight the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, another 20,000 dead. Now, it's called Iran-Contra, given that it seems like the title, the main part of it, is the Contra portion in Nicaragua, but we have to remember the Middle Eastern side of that, the Iran part, was from our gun runners in Israel, as well as the October surprise, which was really one continuous event. Now, these individuals got caught, got pardoned, and that was that. Nobody really got in any dire straits. Ollie North even ran for the presidency afterward. It's unbelievable. Michael Adeen was still in power, and Paul Wolfowitz got promoted. A lot of these guys, these neocons, felt a lot of confidence later when they generated lies to invade Iraq again. And then again, and they falsely connected Iraq to 9/11. And that is why a lot of people oppose the war in Iraq around the world, but of those Americans who did support it, did so because they based that decision on false information. They believed sincerely, even though it was incorrect, they thought Iraq was involved in terrorism and 9/11, because that's what the neocons told them. But they were lying.
Now, I'm going to link in the live chat. This is a pre-recorded interview, but as this is airing, I'm going to link folks to the interview you and I did on September 11th. That was an incredible show. That came together really well and led to some great things. And in that interview, you dig really, really hard into 9/11 101, as I call it.
Yeah, and each of the pre-war lies to Iraq was in that interview as well. And so the details are in that. I would like to talk about what we ought to do about it more, because it's one thing. Step one is like what we did. You have to explain what happened, what really happened. And I would like to spend some time today to say, well, okay, we know we were lied into war. We were deceived. And we have a lot of evidence that the official story on 9/11 is leaving out an enormous amount of information and covering a lot of information up. So what do we do about it?
Yes.
And there is a very concrete, you can say spread the word, this and that. I'm talking about a concrete action that we can take that's going to have a significant difference. And that's getting this joint intelligence report from the Senate and House unredacted, declassified, or at minimal, read by the Congress. That ought to be automatic, but...
You'd think, but, you know.
I wouldn't think. I mean, yeah, you ought to think.
You ought to think, yeah.
Yeah. So I wouldn't think so, though.
Tell folks the basics of what we already know. We don't know what is inside the mysterious 28 pages, but the representative from, I believe, Kentucky read it, and he said it really shook him to the core, and he had
He said he had to rearrange his view of history every two or three pages. Shocking. His history of the Middle East. He had to rearrange everything he thought. First, let me clarify what it is. So the report's over 400 pages, and more than 28 are redacted. But there's a section in that report of 28 consecutive pages that are redacted. PDF pages, about 26 pages, whatever, that are completely whited out in a row. And it's dealing with foreign governments giving financial and operational support to the 9/11 hijackers. Now, if the 9/11 hijackers got support from a foreign government or multiple foreign governments, then 9/11 becomes a lot more believable than the 19 guys with box cutters led by a man in a cave kind of story. And I also want to say, when we're talking about what is this report, the report is not the 9/11 Commission report. The 9/11 Commission report is and was a farce.
Right.
Philip Zelikow whitewashed that. And, of course, Lee Hamilton, who was with Dick Cheney as the chair investigating Iran-Contra, did a nice whitewash on 9/11, too. It's two for that boy. He was on the Tower Commission, too. That is a joke. I'm talking, I mean, it's kind of like the Warren Commission in the Kennedy assassination. That belongs on the fiction shelf.
Right.
However, just like with Kennedy, there was a joint intelligence inquiry into the Kennedy assassination, which determined that there were multiple shooters and a conspiracy. And there was also an investigation into 9/11, which did determine that foreign governments did give support to 9/11 hijackers, but they've redacted all of it. So who is it? Well, I have some tertiary and some direct information to explain who it was. However, the fact that our Senate or a portion of them already know and that they won't share this with the American public is outrageous. It's not top secret, it's secret, but it is available to members of Congress if they apply to the Senate Intelligence Committee to go read this part of the bill. They can go read the whole bill, but they can just go there and read that section. They may have already be aware of some of the other things, although I doubt it. They go in a soundproof room. They're not allowed to take notes. It's very hush-hush, but they could go read it. And those who have read it have changed the way they vote.
Available to them. They, with no problems, unlike the American public, they can go get their hands on this.
Well, they do have to be approved.
Right.
So, I mean, I believe it was Dyson from Florida who got rejected. However, there is a new chairman of the Intelligence Committee. Mike Rogers is replaced by Mike Bishop from Michigan. And so there's a new face and a new chance. So it's one thing to go try to read it or to go apply and get rejected, but many, actually most of the Congress have not even bothered trying to go read it. And there's no excuse, especially for the congressman from New York, let's say. That happened right in their yard. And they blew up buildings in their own city. There's no reason in the world why they wouldn't, just out of curiosity, even go read, or at least apply to read those pages. And I believe if they applied and were denied, that they could band together and really force the issue. Why don't you want us to read? I mean, why not? Why would you not allow someone to do that? In the case of Dice, it seemed that it was just beef between him and Michael over his comments about the NSA, which Michael completely supported. He was a diehard spyster. But he's out of there anyway, so new face, and so we have a new chance. The Congressman Jones, Walter Jones from North Carolina, and Thomas Massie, as I believe you mentioned, and others have read this, and they voted against Iron Dome when the Senate voted 100-0, and the House had eight people voting against it. Seven of the eight people who voted against it had read the 28 pages.
Oh, interesting.
Once you know Israel was involved in 9/11, you're not going to vote to give them money, more than likely. However, we know Saudi Arabia was involved in 9/11. That's not speculating about the 28. That's knowledge from the other 370 some pages that already talk about Saudi, not Saudi Arabia as a state, but individuals like Bandar Bush, through his wife, paying a woman who was paying Al-Mihdhar and Al-Hazmi, who were living in Los Angeles, who ended up on the flight that hit the Pentagon with Hanji Hanjour. And so that's not a secret. And yet, our policy towards Saudi Arabia hasn't really changed anyway. But I don't think the Americans are aware of this report. All the attention went to the 9/11 Commission report, and all the Jonestowning has obfuscated that this report was even done. They're going around like a dog chasing his tail about Building 7 and nanothermite and stuff, and not looking at who was caught celebrating the attacks and filming the first plane hitting. Not just individuals from the state, intelligence operatives of a foreign intelligence agency, the Mossad, were filming and celebrating the attack of 9/11. There were people who were warned from Odigo to get out of the towers. And I seriously doubt that Osama bin Laden and Al Qaeda were giving warnings to young Jewish boys to get out of the towers. It's very obvious. And then you just got to see the whole picture. We already went over this in the 9/11 interview, and people should see my film War by Deception as well, to the details about Israel and 9/11. But as far as operational support goes, the Israelis have been tracking the Hamburg cell, which Mohammed Atta was part of, in Germany. And they were living next door to them in Florida for months and months. They knew, minimal. And this is where the report gets redacted, because the report doesn't have a problem talking about Saudi Arabia. And I know from all the people who probably didn't even bother reading it or anything, the cut and paste media have been saying Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia, because they didn't even bother to look at it. But when you read the report, they already tell you about Saudi Arabia. I don't know why they'd tell you half of it and redact the rest of it. It's as damning as it can be about Saudi Arabia anyway. It's when it gets to operational support in Florida, who had the Mossad living next door to him, that suddenly it's a mystery and it goes blank. Bob Graham, though, has already said in an interview that it was foreign governments with an S, plural, who are helping the hijackers. Now, the anthrax note said death to America, death to Israel. It was the Israeli security forces who gave us the bogus information connecting Iraq to the anthrax and then Iraq to Al-Qaeda. That all came from the Israelis. And it's Israeli partisans in the DOD and Office of the Vice President who gave us that war, which is what 9/11 was for. It was a springboard to launch into multiple theaters of war. And they all came from the same group. And it wasn't Saudi Arabians. It was Israelis.
So now what? What do we do with all of this knowledge? And we have this incredible opportunity with the 28 pages. What do you aim to do coming up in the next couple months, really quickly? You have a strategy about how to affect this in the real world. There's a bunch of keyboard warriors out there in our, you know, in quote unquote, you know, truth seeking circles. We do a lot of circle jerking and just posting to ourselves on our own Facebooks and our Twitters.
Our victory dances, yeah.
Well, right. Let's talk about
the thing. Walter Jones, who used to be a total warmongering idiot, he gave us freedom fries. That's to my embarrassment. Because he's from North Carolina, as am I, but he wanted to rename French fries Freedom Fries because Jacques Chirac at the time was opposing the war in Iraq, and so it was popular to bash France. However, Ron Paul got to him and showed him the light. He's become very anti-war and very suspicious of these activities. He was the only Republican to even attend the Intelligence Committee with the heads of intelligence explaining everything about the Office of Special Plans and what happened there. And he's introduced a bill, which has now been co-sponsored by multiple congressmen, to get the president to declassify the 28 pages. And what I'm aiming to do, I'd ultimately like that goal, but I'm a pragmatist at heart. I would like to, at minimal, get the Congress to apply to read the 28 pages. And on top of that, get the president to declassify him. I don't think Obama will do it, but I'd rather him be forced to that situation so he has to reject it than to not have to do anything at all when by default. And the same with the Congress reading the bill. So I'm actually going to D.C. with a companion. We're going to try and document as much of it as possible to meet with as many congressmen as possible who haven't read the bill. Read the report, and issue an ultimatum. Why haven't you read this, and are you going to co-sponsor this bill so that the president will be placed in a position where he either has to veto it or support it and declassify the information? And those who don't apply, I'm going to call them out on it. We'll have them. We'll say we were there. We told the LA or the congressperson themselves to apply to read these 28 pages. There's no excuse in the world not to do it. And they're going to either have to do it or explain why they didn't. And it's going to be really hard to explain why someone would not want to read information pertaining to the 9/11 attacks, or why Americans aren't allowed to know what foreign governments were helping Al-Qaeda attack the United States and murder thousands of Americans.
Do we have a degree of accountability on this? Do we know, is there a log publicly that we can view who's checked in to read this in this soundproof room? Is there a way we can verify?
Yeah, there is. Well, I mean, kind of. You can see who's co-sponsored the bill. Most likely those who have now signed on to co-sponsor the bill must have read it, must have read the report. That's why they're co-signing. I have a list, but that list is going to grow. Because I'll be in D.C. in April, and I'm going to meet not everyone will be in D.C. Some of them are back in their home states and their home offices sometimes, but whoever's there is getting it. We are going to hit their office hard and demand that they co-sponsor this bill, that the American people and the victims, the families of 9/11 deserve to know this information. And I'm not advocating a war with Israel or Saudi Arabia. But I think we could, at minimal, stop giving them so much money, and the truth ought to be known. This gave us the war on terror. It's worth trillions. It replaced the Cold War. We know what's going down. But the Americans have the right to know this. And if we reverse policy on Israel, it would change everything in the Middle East. We'd save trillions of dollars annually. And we could finally get out of Iraq and Syria. And hopefully freeze or reverse the settlements into Palestine by the Israelis. It could all come down if we can get these 28 pages read. And simultaneous to that, there's going to be the anti-AIPAC conference from IRMAP and Grant Smith. Justin Raimondo will be there, Scott Horton, Jeff Blankford, Allison Weir, all the big hitters will be there. And I'll be attending that as well. And that'll all be up on C-SPAN if you want to watch it. Of course, we'll have recordings, and we'll put up the individual speeches up on Anti-Neocon Report, ANC Report. But the 28 pages, you know, we need help from all of your listeners and those out there. While we are there in person lobbying to get the congressmen to apply to read this report, they need their offices inundated with calls. People need to be calling and demanding in a tactful way that the congressman please apply to read the 28 pages and co-sponsor the bill. The bill number is 428. It's easy to remember. It's as if it was for the 28. 428 to get the president to declassify the whole thing so the American public could read it as well. And if you want to read the parts that are not redacted, you can Google that up, or I'll give you a link that you can link to. I don't have it memorized, but you can just see below or above, however that works on your site, and you can dig into it. They definitely talk about Saudi Arabia all over the place.
Well, let's back up just one second. Since we don't know, as everyday citizens, we don't know the contents of the 28 pages. Let's talk about that a moment. You had addressed that previously on ANC Report. Regardless of the content, okay, because this could be spun any number of directions based on the content if this all comes to light. So do you know what I'm talking about? You addressed it previously that no matter what this says, we have to stay focused, and because they could spin this out of control.
Yeah, whatever it says, listen. And I did a video, if you just write 28 pages in YouTube and look for Rise 2 Cents, I'll give you a rundown on how I know what I know based on those who have read it have hinted here and there, this and that, and you put it all together and you can pretty much deduce what it says. But no matter what, if you find out the Israelis, the Saudis, or both, or even people in our own government were assisting the hijackers, but because people, you have to really see, why would people in our government do that? Because we have a system of privateers, unfortunately.
Yes.
We have, and we've always done this, the British did it before that, bad guys on our payroll who attack. They're attack dogs. But when they get caught, we never heard of the guy. He's just a terrorist. He's just a pirate. Who cares? And we used them in Bosnia, in Kosovo, and Afghanistan. And so a lot of these guys, we think, yeah, we know he's a terrorist, but he's one of ours. That's why they can fly around with their name and they're not getting arrested, because they're on this look-away list. And all it takes is a simple double cross, or they become the privateer of another foreign government instead as a double agent. And it comes back to bite us in the ass. And so they could be covering up an enormous loss of face and embarrassment of losing control of their own privateers.
Yes.
That could be one scenario. Or it could be that they're just covering up their own complicity to create 9/11 on purpose because it's worth trillions of dollars. Or they could be covering up the fact that they uncovered these plots and did nothing about them because allowing it to happen again is worth trillions of dollars. I'm going with the option just based on history of all these conflicts from Kennedy all the way through Iran-Contra all the way up to 9/11 and both Gulf Wars, that the Israelis and the United States are working together as they always do. Now, whether or not Saudi was involved in that, I think, is already pretty clear. If it's not in the 28, it's in the other 300 pages that obviously they had a role. But Saudi Arabia is not independent anyway. that they have a monarchy. They're completely bribed by the United States. They have a symbiotic relationship. They're codependent on one another. But we cannot allow whatever this information says, any of those scenarios I just named, to start another war. That, you know, the people in general in either one of those countries didn't do it. And you cannot collectively condemn or blow up or attack cities over what a government did. Governments are organized crime. They are cartels. That's what they are. And they can be punished. But another war doesn't solve anything. You just can't murder your way out of murder. We should cut money off, no more foreign aid, and definitely change our relations. And we have to start ousting a lot of these spies who have infiltrated the United States. And the people who were involved in 9/11 should personally be held accountable, thrown in jail, executed, whatever. But war is not a proper response to anything other than being attacked.
It just creates a downward spiral of action and reaction, and it gets us nowhere. So in order to get out of this, we're going to have to make some different decisions, and war is never going to solve the problem, correct?
Yeah, because look who's conducting the war, the same people involved in creating 9/11. So I would, you know, how... You just can't do that. The modern warfare destroys entire cities. And there's just too much innocent life lost in a war. It's the governments that did it. Just arrest them. You know where they work. You know where they live. You don't have to have an army invade the entire country and blow up infrastructure and bases. You just have the police go arrest the people who were involved.
Because it's all the same players every time.
It always is.
It's the same cabal of people, you know, going back to Iran-Contra, to everything that you've referenced so far in this show. It's all the same key players. So
October surprise to Watergate to the Kennedy assassination plot, the Bay of Pigs, the same Joint Chiefs who tried to do Operation Northwoods, which is one of the crazier ones they came up with. Kennedy seldom know, by the way. But they've been doing this for a very long time. And it's really hard to get them out of power because it's not really the elected part of government.
Right.
That's the problem. I mean, they are a problem, but... It's the unelected portions of government, all these appointees, the Defense Department, the CIA, all these groups, all these cabinets are these huge bodies of government who do not elect and have no say over. We only elect the lawmaking body and the vice president, and I guess indirectly, I mean the president and indirectly the vice president, I guess, but other than that, you have no say in any of it, really. In the federal level, sometimes judges, but yeah, it's a systematic problem. But until we have a functional media,
yeah,
it's never going to change. If people knew the truth about Iran-Contra, I mean, I guess there was reporting on it in the 80s, but if people knew that clearly, if they knew the Kennedy assassination clearly, or 9/11, or the first war in Iraq, or the second war in Iraq, or why we really hit Libya, or any of these conflicts we have. Why did we invade Grenada? I mean, come on. Seriously. Or any of the coups the CIA was involved in, from Ajax to possibly Venezuela recently. That's still a breaking story, sort of, but Operation Ajax, clearly, Operation Washtub, Operation PV Success, etc. Murdering people, replacing their governments. You just look at any of the Rena governments in Africa. This is more of a European thing than an American thing, but it's still the same system. They completely exploit the area. But there's always some despot willing to grab more IMF loans and play ball with the program. And that's what a government is. It's the managerial arm for corporate conglomerates. And they extract resources and exploit labor. They're the biggest racketeers ever. They They make Hoffa and Giacanta look like peons. The IMF and governments are the problem. I mean, only a government can take a loan out so big that they depreciate the currency for everybody that lives there. If a business takes out a loan and they don't repay it, they go out of business, but it doesn't affect you. When a government takes on a big loan, they hurt the entire population. It's always government to bank or government to government. So government's the problem, not the solution, as Reagan said, ironically. One of the good things he finally said. If only he did what he said.
Well, he was just an actor, and the real power was behind the throne, but, you know, he was
literally an actor.
Literally an actor. I mean, if that isn't transparent in and of itself, I don't know what is. But with the 28 pages, we have this incredible opportunity, and no, this won't be simple. This isn't a one-step, you know, fix-all to fix a giant problem.
People need to do it after we finish, too. We have to press on it. But there's all this energy about 9/11. We need an investigation, and people run around heckling and sloganeering and stuff like Luke Rithofsky. If people in Occupy Wall Street, etc., Occupy, you know, just Occupy DC, if they would go in the building like an adult and talk to them instead of running around playing with drums and stuff, it would be way, way more effective. But I blame the school system. Nobody was really taught how to lobby or how the system works or any of the, you know, practical things in your life that you could actually use and do. They focus on academic minutiae and just drown you in mountains of useless facts most of the time. It still takes an amount of intellectual prowess to master and memorize these things and regurgitate them and all, but that whole time you could have been learning real life skills instead. Just my quick opinion on education. But
yes.
That's why when we go to lobby, I'm going give a little speech there on the stairs of the Hart Building or wherever, depending on which, you know, section of it we're going to be in, about what I'm about to do. I'm going to go in and I'm going to record the whole process so that people can learn how to do it and not be intimidated by it. Because it is a very big building, very fancy and everything. And you just need to know how to go in and set up a meeting and what to say to the legislative assistant, try and get your foot in the door and articulate the information. And hopefully we can live stream this or quickly put it out on the internet right after we do it. It's going to be a very, very busy day, but that night we're still going to upload. But we need everybody to call.
Yes.
And as we're going, we'll have the numbers out and say, we're hitting this office and all day long. And this is what's great about the time zones. That can be done. You know, people on the East Coast all the way to the West Coast or Hawaii can be calling all day, right when you wake up or whatever, to the same offices, saying, read the 28. Just forget every issue. They always say, well, we have this health care or this or that, some other huge issue to deal with. There's not an issue bigger than 9/11. Sorry. So they can't use that excuse.
Right.
You say, look, there's information about foreign governments involved with these hijackers in 9/11. And you haven't even read it or tried to, probably because they don't know about it. Can they be that dumb? Absolutely. We're talking about Congress. You know, I can't articulate enough how basic a lot of these people are or how they got in there.
Basic.
They're
right.
Basic. They're a bunch of basic bitches, and you need to handhold with them and say, you can go over here and ask this man to read these, and, you know.
I'm glad you're going to be doing, you know, how to lobby 101. And that's one thing that Attorney Alan Phillips and I have been working on as it relates to the mandatory vaccine issue, because people, like you said, precisely, they are intimidated by the process of approaching their legislators. And as it relates to, you know, the vaccine stuff, it's not my job or the job of any activist approaching their representative, I don't have to convince them in three sound bites because I don't have a lot of their time. You know, I'll book an appointment. You know, they agree to see me for 10, 15 minutes. I'm not there to explain an issue that literally could take thousands of hours for me to completely flesh out for an individual. You're there to drop a few sound bites because that's how our culture works in general. You know, we're programmed to hear and process sound bites. And also these people don't have a lot of time to spend with you. So boil it down to a few salient points, which you've already said. You can say in two sentences, why aren't you reading this? There isn't an issue bigger than 9/11. So don't give me any crap about the fact that you're busy with other things. Nothing could be more important than this.
Yeah, read it and co-sign it. There's no and everyone who's read it too has said, look, it has nothing to do with national security, because that's always the excuse to classify right. anything. National security and classify it. It just means this is embarrassing to us. Let's just say it's national security and classify it.
Yep.
In every case where anything's been declassified, we found out that it never has anything to do with national security. It's just embarrassing to the administration, and it won't be declassified until the new one's in. Obama needs to declassify it. He could do that anyway. But we need the Congress. They already have a bill in place, so let's get it read and let's get this done. And I'm not saying I'm an expert at lobbying. I would say I'm an expert on 9/11 as far as just spitting the information out or condensing it. I'm not saying you have to study 9/11 for 15 years or something, but whatever your issue is, you need to learn the process. And a lot of lobbyists get paid by interest groups now. We're not. We're lobbying for justice.
Right.
And that's the thing. When you go to talk to people, they say, what group are you with? You can say, I'm an American citizen who's concerned about X. And
right.
That's all you have to do.
Right.
I did that for beach erosion. And you know what? Finally, after fighting that since I was a child, basically, Cape Hatteras is going to get beach nourishment starting this year.
Oh, wow.
Finally. That has struggled my whole life. Family members are involved in that too. I mean, the whole island is suffering.
Yeah.
And Walter Jones snuck it in on the NDAA bill, which he knew, unfortunately, the rest of that bill was terrible this year. It is every year. But he knew it was one that was going to pass. So for once, the pork was in our favor. We put in an item that was unrelated to NDAA, and it passed with the rest of it. So at least, usually there's a good bill that has something bad tacked on.
This right.
is a bad bill that had something good tacked on.
So, and those issues couldn't be on any, they're not related whatsoever. There's
no, there's nothing, like, just, I guess, slightly protecting America's coastlines in a way. Actually, yeah, you would be. That's actual defense, because you're not allowing, you know, your coastline to erode and lose your city there or town. But yeah, NDA was a lot of nasty in NDA last year. For people who don't know, there is no such thing as the NDAA. That's just the national defense budget. Every year they have a new one. I have people ask, do you know about the NDAA of whatever, you know, that allowed Obama to drone strike civilians? And yeah, I do. But do you realize that's an annual thing? And there's always another one, and they always put other bad stuff in it. Just clarifying that for anyone that didn't know that.
Now, let me ask you, because we're coming down the end of this segment, to completely switch gears, everybody knows, well, they should know, that you are an expatriate living in Japan. So let me ask you, I love to ask you cultural questions about Japan. So right now, in your media, is anyone talking about measles? Does anyone care about measles in Japan right now?
No. Nothing.
No, nothing? Here, it's like absolute pandemonium. Measles, measles, measles. Even though I just looked it up this morning, we haven't had a new reported case.
We had nothing about Ebola, too, until the comedy shows got hold of it.
Really?
They were making fun of how obsessed Americans were over Ebola. Because they're like, it's not an airborne disease. What are they freaking out about?
And like we said at the top of this entire show, was you and I were right. We were calling it out. As soon as Ebola news hit the mainstream media here in the States, which overlapped with your stay here in the States, you came to L.A.
Hey, I remember my title of the first and only video I made on the subject. It's called "You're Not Gonna Die from Ebola." That was the title.
And how true. We're not dead from it. I think it's going to, quote, make a comeback one way or another when these vaccines are ready. We'll see. That's my guess. But everybody's still freaking out about measles right here in the United States right now. And the response, it's interesting. I talked to you a few times off mic about the response here culturally. And this has now turned from a discussion about, you know, infectious disease to now, as of yesterday, I saw some articles saying that, you know, Republicans are, you know, causing the measles outbreak because they're pro-choice as it relates to vaccines, and the Democrats are being responsible and saying we need mandatory vaccination. So it's suddenly turned from a medical issue, you know, about an issue about public health to a
partisan issue, of course.
Yeah, and it's so strange. And there's all this new legislation cropping up all over the United States, including here in the great state of Pennsylvania. We have a bill in our state house to remove philosophical exemptions. So I'm pushing back. I'm organizing to push back on that pretty hard. So everything that you said as it relates to lobbying is completely relevant to what, you know, I'm going through. And this
look,
is more,
if you got a vaccine and they work, you're not going to get the measles. So why are you worried?
Precisely. I mean, really, it should be a non-issue. If you partake in the vaccines and you're confident in that product, then what's the issue? But this is being blown completely out of proportion. We haven't had a new case of measles since February 4th. I looked it up this morning. So the measles outbreak is dying down. It is, as I told you when I was on.
It's just the measles. Like, oh, I got a fever. Oh, so? Like,
literally, for most patients, it's lasting, you know, 2 to 3 days, and then it's over with. Yes, it is.
They suddenly discover the chicken pox, you know, like people get
chicken pox. Yeah, I'm waiting for that.
People but you know what? Measles or not, you know.
Chicken would be a less effective tool to leverage right now. So I don't think we'll see chicken pox make a resurgence. But measles is interesting.
I'm just giving examples of stuff that almost everyone had in their life.
Well, that's exactly the point I was going to make is, you know, you and I in our generation, chickenpox was endemic. It's something that you and I as kids who grew up in the 80s and 90s saw, and we saw that it wasn't a big deal. So chickenpox wouldn't be an effective tool, whereas measles is something we haven't seen, you know, for decades, really, because it was already dying out in 1955. It was way on the decline at that time. Even prior to the vaccine being introduced in 1963. So measles is a great tool to scare people with because people have ignorance about what the condition is and what it is not. So they're ramping it up to fear levels comparable to or exceeding what we saw with Ebola. And it's just, it's absolute, it's a, you know, dog and pony show.
Well,
and
it's always something. When I was in school, the big scary things were the hole in the ozone and AIDS. And the hole in the ozone, I guess, has been replaced with global warming. But whatever happened to the hole in the ozone? Did you get all that when you were a child?
It's like, you know what?
Fluorocarbons are going to eat up the O3 in the atmosphere and create a big hole and fry us all and melt the ice caps.
Oh, man. I was so worried about it when I was like 8. I had books about it. I had a book that I still have. I think it's under my bed currently called 50 Things Kids Can Do to Save the Earth. And there's this whole section about biofluorocarbons and how they're in hairspray.
Did you notice how that whole thing was just forgotten when they found out it was a natural hole and it's always been there or whatever? They go, oh, oops. And if it turns out that global warming is a natural cycle and deals with the sun and everything, they'll just make up another scary scenario.
There'll be new fear porn rolling out, and there'll be no accountability. No one will remember.
AIDS,
you know,
AIDS is real. But
yeah,
it was just nonstop talk about AIDS, and now it's not a big deal. Like, they go, yeah, use protection, you'll be fine. Like,
and people who don't even use protection and who grew up in the 80s and 90s.
Well,
and
the thing is, if you're a heterosexual, non-drug using male, you had less than a 10th of a percent chance of getting AIDS from sex. But a tenth, that's less than 1%. You know, I didn't say 10.
Right.
That's always been the case.
But we grew up in the 80s and 90s, and, you know, there was all those, like, you know, heal the world kind of concerts for AIDS, and AIDS was on everyone's mind. And, yeah, no one's really talking about AIDS, but, you know, look what's happening in the third world in Africa with AIDS.
Yeah, well, talk about Ebola. But what about the common flu? You know, what about the IMF? You want to talk about a killer,
right?
In Africa or anywhere, it's the banks. That's a preventable, I would call them a disease. They're not a disease in the conventional sense, but they're more like a cancer. Or a parasite, I think, would be the best analogy.
Yeah, parasite. I'm going to go with parasite on that one.
We actually had a discussion in L.A. Is the government more like a cancer or AIDS or a parasite?
A parasite with AIDS that gives you AIDS. I don't know.
I don't know. I went with parasite.
But to change topic quickly, because we should wrap up this segment, I just lost my train of thought. Oh yeah. We spent $28 million to circumcise African men to attempt to stop AIDS in Africa. So your tax dollars went to chop off some schlong skin in Africa.
Has nothing to do with preventing AIDS.
Right. And I wish I had the figures in front of me. I debunked this really clearly using the data of how many German men are circumcised as it relates to the HIV issue. You know, I would have sooner...
Circumcision is just ridiculous. But I think it was you who broke that story with... Remember when Facebook was getting Ebola donations or something?
Yeah.
And they were spending it on, you know, building a satellite so they could get more information about Ebola to wherever. And it was just for their own expanding Facebook and Facebook servers.
When everyone signed on to Facebook, you know, for like a couple weeks straight, there was a pop-up that said, donate to Ebola. Then I dug into it and found out that that's where the money was going. And they were literally giving internet access to, you know, everyday Africans so that they could supposedly look up Ebola. So,
like,
okay.
I'm okay with giving internet to Africans.
Yeah.
But be honest about it. Just say, I want to give internet to Africans. I would have donated to that. But say, I'm donating for Ebola. I'm like, I'm not giving you money for that because it's not a problem.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, this has been fun. We need to go to a commercial break. We are overdue. Folks, that was my guest, Ryan Dawson. Ryan, promote the heck out of yourself, friend. Tell people how they can, first of all, donate to you and talk about your films. Just go ahead. Tell us all about how to see your work and how
to... Shameless plugs. All right. ANCReport.com. ANC stands for Anti-Neocon. Report.com. You can become a member for $5 a month and get all the downloads for all the podcasts. See, I was unaware. In Japan, the internet is free. I did not know that when you were not on Wi-Fi in the U.S. and you wanted to listen to like a podcast or a long video or something that takes many megabytes, that you have to pay for that. I didn't know that. And so instead of paying the phone company or whoever it is you're using your internet provider with, you go ahead and give me 10 cents instead, or less than that, whatever it adds up to. $5 a month is pretty cheap, and you can become
Absolutely.
A member. It's free anyway, so if you just want to listen to it at your house or whatever, it's already free. But if you want to be able to download them so that you can listen to it outside without having to pay the man, then you should just become a member. You're also going to get the pre-screening for War by Deception 2015 and all the other documentaries that I do, as well as some other goodies, extended stuff on the podcast and things. So it's well worth that, $5. And
$5?
If you just want to donate, there's a donate button for PayPal that usually goes into a little cookie jar that I save up for making documentary films. I've been working on the Kennedy assassination forever. I'm making an Iran-Contra film. I decided to do that in the middle of upgrading War by Deception. I kept adding more and more about Iran-Contra, and I said, you know what? This is already a movie here anyway. I just need to explain what happened in the 80s. Because it's really key. It bridges the gap between generations. And for those people who say, conspiracies never... Blah, 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 here was a conspiracy that got busted wide open and involved multiple countries, billions of dollars, tens of thousands of people were killed. It all happened in secret until... Of course, they crashed their plane full of guns and drugs. And then, again, the plane that went down in Russia, piloted by the Israelis, headed for Iran, full of American weapons. You can't get caught more red-handed than that. But the fact that had been going on for years secretly shows that, yes, conspiracies can and do happen and have happened and will happen. They just got caught because of a freak plane crash. That not happened. They could have kept doing it for a few more years. Who knows? Who knows what else they've done that they got away with already? You know, we happen to catch them there. Is it? I mean, we've caught the CIA running drugs to Mexico and planes filled with cocaine. And then they just keep on doing it. Nothing happens to them. There's no accountability. Nope. We've got to change the system. We've got to get this 28. So my website is ANC Report. And there's also all my YouTube videos are on there in the video section. Documentaries that I made, as well as documentaries that I like that other people made. Lakota Woman's a good one if you want to know about Native American issues and the retaking of Wounded Knee. I was surprised by how many people didn't know that. I thought it was pretty common. I guess not. Everything there, from Bill Still's Money Masters on economics to Native American issues to things on Ukraine, things on Iraq, etc. There's a lot of documentaries up there. And then, of course, there's the podcast and the report. So there's a nice site there. The books. The newest book is Separation of Business and State. And you can get it on Amazon or you can get it off my site. And every time I do a donor campaign, I sell autographed ones as well to some people. I can only sign as many as I have, though. So those are limited. But. Mm-hmm. And then we got a shop up there with some pretty awesome t-shirts that say, hey, end all age Israel, with little missiles, little dollar signs, and then ANC Report in the front. Some people say, could I actually wear that outside? I do all the time. I'll wear it in the U.S. I'll wear one every day when I'm there. But the taboo has to start you got to break it down. It's got to start somewhere. And people have got to lose this fear.
Yes.
About talking about Israel. Look, they're murdering kids. I don't care if someone's going to call me a name or accuse me of something, which they have. I'm on the Southern Poverty Law Center site with some smear campaign that says that I said Judaism advocates pedophilia and rape, which I have never, ever said, never will. It's ridiculous. Adam Holland wrote a hit piece about me in the Interpreter. He says anti-Russian Zionist rag. And I was on Israeli TV getting smeared. And so, you know what? It didn't change my life at all.
Nope.
Whatever. Okay. Whatever happened to sticks and stones, you know? Look, if you criticize Obama, there might be someone who says, you hate black people. Shut up.
How about, right,
I don't
right.
like his policies, you know?
Right.
If you criticize, whatever you criticize when it comes to politics, somebody's going to say something nasty. So what? I mean, kids are getting killed. People are being racially colonized. It's got to stop. And you've just got to grow a set. You've got to be enough of a man or a woman to say enough is enough. It's not anti-Semitic to criticize Israel.
No.
Stick it. You know, they're a criminal enterprise, and you've got to criticize the American government. You cannot have this Chris Kyle fanboy, America right or wrong, no matter what attitude. The war in Iraq was wrong, and sniping and shooting all those people was wrong. Once they're there and they're already in the situation and they're just trying to get home alive, I understand, but you can't start the story in the middle. And if you are going to do that, you can't give all the praise to it after the fact, say how great it was to kill all those people. You got to say, what a horrible situation it was. I'm sorry you got fooled. I'm sorry you were lied to and got put in such a position. But you sure as hell are not a hero for murdering hundreds of people. One man shooting somebody from a mile away is also not brave.
No.
It's just pathetic. And I don't know why anybody would celebrate such a thing. But again, Jessica Lynch 2.0, he became the new face for a very unpopular war. And the way I saw Adam Kukesh did a great video where he's interviewing people outside the theater, and a lot of them was idiotically connected to Iraq, which is insane. So, anyway, ancreport.com's got all the goodies, and
yes,
your donations matter. I mean, we're going to lobby, and I already raised money for this trip, but the more I can make between now and April, the longer I can stay in D.C., the lobby. And of course, I'll be covering the Anti-AIPAC conference one day, which is well worth it. But I'd like to add a day of lobbying to replace that if possible. And I'm hoping that when we leave, that there will be a team right behind us to go in and continue. I know no one person or group has enough money to just stay in D.C. and lobby that interest group. But if we divide it up, we definitely have the numbers. And if you can have sets of people just go in so that we always have a presence every day of somebody going around the buildings bringing up this issue and demanding they read the pages, I honestly believe we can get this done. And we could change the world. Because getting those pages read, especially if they're just declassified, and having the world have that information, would change everything.
It would change.
We have information of the Mossad, you know, celebrating the attacks and everything, but it doesn't. It's not on TV. And so there will always be a large circle of people who get all their news on the couch who are just not reached by this. But if the 28 are declassified, it will be unavoidable. The foreign press will report it minimal, and that's going to force the alphabet soup networks in the U.S. to have to do it.
Yes.
This is our time, and this is our action.
An incredible moment and an incredible opportunity. And for as much as we dog the quote unquote sheeple that sit on their couch and consume news as infotainment, you know, us in the truther, quote unquote, truth seeking circles, I call the Freedomizer Radio Network. I've said to you off mic, Ryan, that we are the post Alex Jones crowd, but you know, we can be just as guilty just being keyboard warriors, you know, posting on our own personal Facebook for our, you know, high school friends and our family to see the same regurgitated crap. Get up off the couch, get up from behind the desk, and let's get involved in this. This is our opportunity. This is our shot.
Yeah, we can be ready to call. I mean, you know what? You don't have to wait for us to go. Start calling them now.
Right.
You know, get good at it.
Exactly.
Get the numbers, congress.org, whatever you ought to know. Look up, Google your congressman at least. Call your own congressman. You're not going to get to talk to them, but you'll talk to legislative assistants. Say, I have a message to pass on to so-and-so. And say you want them to read the 28 pages, redacted pages from the JIS report, or just say the intelligence report. They know what it is. Tell them you want those 28 read and to pass that along. Thank you. Then get another cell phone, call back, do it again.
Simple. Rinse it. Right. Now,
no
folks,
one's doing it, though. Not very few. And this needs to be a core issue.
To set the table for what you're going to do in April. So, yes, start calling now. And if this is the first time you're hearing about the 28 pages, I would suggest you go to YouTube, type in Rye Dawson, R-Y, and last name D-A-W-S-O-N to get to his channel, which is Rise 2 Cents. Search on the channel for the 28 pages. There's some great videos there.
If just write 28 pages. I think it's the third video down. But
there you go. So go ahead, get yourself educated. Just all, in terms of lobbying, as we said earlier, just think of, you know, in sound bites, think of a few quick sentences that, you know, would grab someone's attention. So start there. Ryan, I'd like to thank you once again, friend, for being on the show. I want to bring you back pretty quickly. We can promote the heck out of this, ramping up to the event in April, which is going to be exciting, and I can't wait for the live stream. And since I'm in Pennsylvania, I'll be joining you because I'm not that far away. There's so many
actually driving from New York to D.C., and we may stop somewhere in PA, I'm sure.
Stop by. I'm literally on the way. Stop by and pick me up, man, and then we'll just head down and just mess up some stuff in the name of justice and liberty. We've got some real exciting times ahead in the future, folks. So, again, ancreport.com. My guest has been the illustrious Ryan Dawson. I am your host, Colleen Harding, and this was Project Socrates. We're going to a commercial break, and we're going to bring back Hannah McCoy, aka the Factivist, who is also a dear friend of Ryan's and myself, and that'll be exciting too. So thanks again, Ryan.
Yeah, and props to Hannah. She'll be lobbying right along with me. So
exciting time,
folks. Woo-hoo! You guys are going to love the new War by Deception, by the way. It is, well, I mean, it was already great, but I'm really proud of this one.
as you should be. You put out some of the most incredible and most salient work in all of these topics. War by Deception is a film that the number one film that I recommend to anyone who's just getting into this information. I mean, really, it's so
something you can share with your family without having to explain away a bunch of kookiness too.
Yes, whereas juxtapose that with, you know, the InfoWars kind of material. In the past, they made some pretty good films, but it just got kookier and kookier and more embarrassing over time. And I'd rather present to, you know, my friends and family or coworkers something, you know, more scholarly, which I have always said your work certainly is. So I appreciate you. And now we're going to a commercial break. Thanks again, Rye. We'll see you later.
Thanks, Colleen.
We'll be back.